As maybe some of you know that we're here at our last family study, maybe we're taking a little different approach others would give, but I believe this is the direction that the Lord has given me. Have you heard before at the beginning of a program on a radio station, it says the opinions on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this station or its management. Brother Stanley and Brother Philip have been willing for me to share what I feel like the Lord has given me in the manner that the Lord has given it to me. And it's, you know, we talk about comfort zone. It stretches the comfort zone. But at the same time, like we heard this morning about the Lord saying, I'd like to take this lump. I'm not going to throw it off the table. I'd like to make something else out of it. That's what I feel like the Lord has done with me, is come along and said, you know, I want to make some changes in you. I'm not going to throw you away. Heaven's out there. I want you to make heaven. Once he did that, I was so thankful for it that when he said, now I'd like you to be willing to share it. Sometimes that's tough to give it in this manner. But tonight, you know, after last month, I thought, whew, that's over now. And then the Lord started dealing again with a couple other areas. Tonight I'd like to share them with you. I'd like for this to be it's not a sermon, it's not a message. I'd like to be this, that this would kind of be a family sitting around in the living room, a discussion, sharing things that have happened in the past that we could learn from one another. That may be mistakes that I've made. Somebody else would say, you know, I hope to remember that out in the future. Our subject has been husband and wife relationship. It would be a lot easier to deal with this subject if I could tell you, run down to the print shop. They've got a book there. Chapter 5 will tell you all you need to know, and then I could sit down. This is the direction I believe that the Lord has given me. Experience that's obtained from doing it right or failing to do it right. If we'll let it, it will cause us to be able to profit by it out in the future. Thought also of this saying, we've heard it probably all our lives. Experience is the best teacher. I agree with that tonight on this subject that we're looking at. It's a true statement. Especially if it's somebody else's experience that I'm profiting by. That's the best teacher. That I don't have to go through it myself. That I'd be able to profit by what somebody else can tell me. Don't do it that way. A couple weeks ago, I had a problem on a car. I bought a manual that it says on the front. It says this is based on an actual disassembly and a reassembly of every part on this car. You have a problem with it, open up to this page and we'll show you step by step how to go through, how to repair that part. There were also some things, what I had wrong with mine was a strut needed to be changed. And that's a difficult thing to change. It's almost one that they don't even recommend for a beginner because of a spring in it that, and they gave a highlight on there, danger. This could cause personal injury or death. I can benefit by somebody else doing a breakdown and put back together and putting in there, hey, be careful of this part. Or I can be bullheaded, throw the book aside and say I can do it on my own. And then the spring comes off and I suffer from it. So tonight what I'd kind of like to do is for us to be able to share with each other the past and benefit for the future. There's also another one. History repeats itself. Does it have to? Do we have to fall in the same ruts as the past generations? Never able to move ahead. Never able to better ourselves. I think we can do better. I could spare myself a lot of heartache if I take heed to Bible instruction and personal testimonies around me. Actual happenings. With a divorce rate that's over 50%. The possibility for receiving instruction abounds. All we have to do, if we're willing to look at the manual, look around us. Instruction abounds. With a failure rate so high, what's my chance of my marriage surviving? It can be 100%. God planned it from the beginning. Successful marriages are still possible. I've got a place that I'd like for us to start, and maybe if somebody would look it up for me. Philippians 2 and 3. I've got a rototiller at home. If I need to just go across the yard to the garden, I can do that. Not tear up much ground, it'll just run across the top. If I want to till, I've got to really pull back on it. Hold it still so it'll start digging the tines in. Or there's a bar in the back. You can drop that bar and you no longer have to worry about holding it. It'll stay there and dig a hole that you're going to have to push it out of. Tonight, my desire, my prayer is for each of us that the Lord will drop that bar for us. And that tonight, we would each one do some digging. Be able, for myself, to be able to dig. Lord, you've got successful marriages for us all. It doesn't matter if the rate goes up to 80%. You still have what's possible for me to have a successful marriage. God intended for it not to be just something that I've got to bear because that was His plan. He intended it to be the next thing to heaven. Somebody have that verse, Philippians 2 and 3. Let each esteem other. As I was praying about this for this time around, asking the Lord, what do you have for this one? This is the verse that He brought. I've seen this verse before. I've looked at it as when I go to church, I need to esteem others better than myself. This verse is no more important than at home. That's where I spend most of my time. As a husband and wife, I believe this is the guarantee for a happy home. Let each esteem other greater than himself. I looked up the definition of esteem: to set a value on, whether high or low, to estimate, to value. Now, we're not talking about building pride. There's another verse that says not to think more highly than we ought to think. What we're talking about is a helpmeet, one that stands by our side and walks through life with us. There's a story several years ago. I read it, and it really had an impact on me, but then I forgot it. For years, I forgot it. Wish I would have remembered it during that time. As I was seeking the Lord about this, He brought that story back to my mind, and I'd like to share it with you here. Let each esteem other greater than himself. You may have read it yourself. It says on an island in the South Pacific, there was a custom to the women as they grew up, ready to be married. The men would come, and when they chose her to be the one they wanted to marry, they'd go to the father, and they'd work a deal. If that girl was pretty, if she was popular, they paid for it in the price of cows. And that gave her something that out in the future she saw her worth. Said 4 or 5 cows was the best price paid for any wife on that island. Status symbol for a wife's value. There was a young woman there, said she didn't have much self-confidence. Her head hung down when she walked. Shoulders drooped. The relatives came along to give some advice to the father of her. They said, I tell you what, should anybody come along, ask for 3 cows, hold out for 2, and settle for 1. Was it any reason that her shoulders drooped? Self-confidence. Along came a young man. He fell in love with her. The father's hoping to be able to get 3. The young man came to him, and without any dealing, he told him, I'll give you 8 cows for your daughter. The father couldn't believe it, but he jumped at the offer. There was a visitor came to that island, heard this story, and he said, I can't believe a person would do that. When he could have settled for so much less, why would he do it? I want to go see this person. I want to visit with him. He went to see this young man. The young man had a reply for him. I'd like to read it here. The young man told him, do you ever think what it must mean to a woman to know that her husband has settled on the lowest price for which she can be bought? And then later, when the women talk, they boast of what their husbands paid for them. One says 4 cows, another maybe 6. How would my wife feel when she was sold for 1 or 2? He said, I wanted an 8-cow wife. And when I paid that for her, and when I treated her in that fashion, that's the part that I would like to stick in our mind. When I paid that for her, when I treated her in that fashion, he didn't pay that for her, take her home and say, now I want you to know what you owe me. It's going to take a long time to get back what all I paid for you. He didn't do that. When he treated her in that fashion, it turned her around. It says she began to believe that she was an 8-cow woman. She discovered she was worth more than any other woman on the islands. And what matters most is what a woman thinks of herself. Not pride, self-confidence. A helpmeet. What I'd like to share with us tonight, to the husbands, do you remember when you chose the one that you married? This is the one I want to marry. No price was too high. Willing to give anything. Genesis 29. Let's look at it for just a little bit. The 29th chapter, and in the 18th verse. And Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Here's the price that the father put for the daughter. I'll let you marry her. It'll take 7 years. What does that say about Jacob? It says those 7 years seemed to him but a few days for the love that he had for Rachel. I think about bringing this on down to where we live today. I believe the Lord has dealt with me about, let's bring it down to where we live so we can all understand it. I didn't give 8 cows for Cheryl, but I was willing to do whatever necessary in my power for her to be my wife. I went to Cheryl's dad and I just kind of went to her dad and asked for her. They've been nervous about what I was going to say tonight, but this is a family setting. Asked for her. He said yes. He didn't require 7 years. He said, yes, you can marry her. But he gave me a recommendation. He said, get a job. Now, he didn't say it just that way, because I had a job. I already had one. I was making the candy wrappers for the Jolly Rancher candy pieces. And I was in love. That was all that was needed. But he came along and he said, it'd be good for you to look out in the future, learn a trade, something that will help to support your wife. You know, this is just a time of sharing. I looked at that, said I want to marry her at any price. Now I need to learn a trade. I want to learn a trade. Went to work the next day at the Jolly Rancher candy wrapper factory, looking for a trade. Talked to a friend there about it. Said, I need to learn a trade. He said, you know, I'm going to be starting an air conditioning school in just a few days. And I said, me too. Now, you know, there are some people that spend years in deliberation of which way do I want to go. I just needed a trade. You know, I thought about that. since that time, what if he had said, I'm going to plumbing school? I was just looking for a trade. I had no thought about air conditioning. It was just that I needed a trade. This young man said I wanted an 8-cow wife, and I treated her in that fashion. There can be such a difference between our courting days and real life if we're not careful. I'd like for us to, this is a family setting. Sometime in the daily routine, we can forget the value that we placed on our companion when we were dating. When we first got married, we were broke. Didn't have hardly any money. A few months later, I had tires that I had to get replaced, at least two of them. We used to call the ones that I had May Pops. They're guaranteed to pop sometime soon. So I went, made sure I had enough in checking to pay for two of them. That was about all I had in checking. Got up to go to work one morning. Told Cheryl, I want you to run down today while I'm at work and buy me two tires for this car. Everything was fine. Came home that evening, walked by the car. They don't do it now, but used to on the white walls, they'd have this blue that went around them. I had four tires that had blue on them. Instantly, I was agitated. What did you do? I barely got enough money in here for two tires. Remember this 8-cow story? What we had was a failure to communicate. Back then, there was no such thing as overdraft protection. So I called the tire place, and I said, please, sir, we got a problem. Would you take two tires back? We're talking about pass along instruction. They won't take two tires back. So we had to work through that one. But you know what? If I had remembered that story that we looked at a while ago, I would have said, don't worry about it. You're worth eight tires to me. There would have been no, if it would have happened when we were courting. And what I'd like for us all to do, to some it's been a long time ago, to some it hasn't been long ago, I'd like for us all to think back to what it was when we were courting. Do we have to leave that time? How can we keep from leaving that time? The advice I have from that is, don't ask your wife to do jobs that are in your category. It has nothing to do with they're not capable. It has the same thing to do with if she had sent me to Hancock's to get some fabric and a pattern for her, I'd have messed it up. There are some things that we can learn that will help us out in the future. And you know, I told you that I wanted to do this one a little different rather than being up there, be down here where we can kind of have a family setting. So I'm kind of at the end of my story right there. So I wrote down here, I want to give an opportunity. If there's any husbands here that have seen over the past few years that maybe an experience that you want to relate that would reinforce this thought. But then I wrote here, if there's no response, maybe we could restate the question. Wives, do your husbands have any stories that they could tell? I would like for this to be more of a relaxed setting, but you know what? It's that serious. I had a determination when Cheryl and I were going together. I remember telling her, we're going to celebrate our 25th anniversary and have never had an argument. I remember telling her that. I thought about this right here. Within every wife is a flower, potential. It's ready to bloom. As a husband, I can cultivate it with care to a full bloom or I can crush it. I have that potential. 50% of the marriages today have chosen to crush it. This can happen both ways. It's for all of us to take heed to. Sometimes the men would like to act like, nothing bothers me. I can make it on my own. I don't have feelings. That's not the truth. Don't want the wives to be fooled by that. Your husbands need you. They need your support. Cheryl has the power to make my day or ruin it. When she says things like, I want you to know I appreciate you getting up in the morning, going out to work and providing so I won't have to, puts a spring in my step, puts a song on my lips. This is not just about the husbands to the wives. It's the wives to the husbands. It's possible. I've seen it happen. For a wife to belittle her husband to the point that he has no self-esteem. I had a guy that I worked with for several years. He's gone from there now. Good electrician. Did great work for us. There would be days that he would be coming in so low, I'd ask him, what's the matter? Because he was usually so cheerful. When he would finally open up and start talking, his wife would start letting him know, the job you're doing is a sorry job. You ought to be able to do better. You're not providing well enough. There's other people who have bigger houses than we do. And by the time she got through with him, he'd hardly feel like coming to work. It would ruin his day. And at the same time, I had seen where he had come from. He had a mother that left him with grandparents and had brothers and sisters that were at young ages were just drunkards. And I tell him, I want you to look back at where you've come from, where you could have been, and don't let that bother you. But it can affect us. It can really affect us. I'd like for us to all, let's work on this area. Remember the story, though it seems so distant, of the eight-cow wife. When I was courting, she meant everything to me. Said when he treated her in that fashion, it changed everything for her. Think of a verse, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abides alone. I can make up my mind that as a man of the house, I'm going to rule it with an iron hand. People have done it, and they abide alone. Literally, abide alone. Was it worth it? Such a cost. That's right. Walked off, thought they won. The cost was way too high. For a lifetime, God never intended that the marriage of a man and woman would be something that would have to be endured. He intended it to be a relationship that we benefit each other. And good comes from it. And I'll tell you, what has made it easier for me to be willing to stand up here and tell you, places like this, it's because the Lord has done it for me. Places where maybe you want things to happen in your home, want them to be different, it's amazing that that can happen when you die. Genesis 2 and 18. And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. There was maybe 150, 200 years ago, maybe one of the darkest times in American history, slavery, where one man could own another, where he could require obedience by force. Some, the oppression was so great, they rebelled and ran away. Then one day there came an Emancipation Proclamation. All men are now free. You know, I've seen people at work before to say, you know what, I've got to stay with this job right now. I hate it. I hate my boss. I hate everything about it. I've got a lot of things I'm going to say when I turn in my notice and just before I leave. Maybe that happened to a lot of people then when they realized I'm free now. This man no longer owns me. But there was something that has really stuck with me. Stories that came out. There were some slaves that had been treated so kindly. During that time, they had no desire to leave. They continued working together as a partner. That master had treated them in such a way, Emancipation Proclamation meant nothing to them. They had been treated well before. Here's what I'd like to get from that. God never intended one person to own another in a marriage. He said, it's not good that a man should be alone. I'm going to make him a helpmeet. Just as valuable as he is, no lower than he is, a helpmeet. That should cause him to be so thankful that God sent her along. There's a verse in 1 Peter in the 3rd chapter and in the 7th verse. It says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together. This is the part that I'd like for us to keep in our mind. As being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. God never intended one to be another. They were to be heirs together. This is an area that as a husband, I need to be real careful about. Because there are some verses that I can pick up and run with. Maybe we don't need to go to them, but I'd like to tell you about three of them. 1 Peter 3:1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husband. Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husband. Ephesians 5:33. Let the wife see that she reverence her husband. Armed with these scriptures, if I'm not careful, I can feel like I'm the king. Remember the story of Queen Esther? Seemed like that'd be a great position to be in at that kind of time. A queen has people attending her, maids taking care of her, doesn't have to do a thing. What about her? Wants to go in to see her husband. Unless he holds out the royal scepter, she dies. She has this question that she needs to go in and talk about. She asks him, be praying. I even need you to fast because I need to go in and talk to my husband. You know what she said? If I die, I die. Was that a happy life? It wasn't then, nor is it now. I have another example. There was a time where I controlled the money. I looked at it this way in thinking about the last few days. Cheryl would have to go before the financial review board, which was me, for purchase approval. Dan, I need some clothes. Can I have some money for this? It's true, my job was to see that the dollars made it to the next payday. But I was unbalanced. Because this same review board always approved my purchases. One day, remember this story about the 8-cow wife? When he treated her in that fashion, it turned everything around. One day, Cheryl came to me and said, Dan, I want you to know it makes me feel bad to have to come to you every time I need something. Kind of like a daughter coming to the father for an allowance. I hadn't really seen it that way. But we made a change. We still got to make sure the money makes it to the payday. But we started a budget to where she could know there's some money that I don't need to go to him and say, "Can I have some money?" I know that that kind of thing happens. There's a verse that says, "My brother, these things ought not so to be." Maybe it talked about a different subject, but I think about it applies here. There is a place that this helpmeet that God gave me would not have to walk around with her head hung down. But because of me treating her in the fashion that this young man did, that it gives her some self-esteem. And he put it right at the beginning of the Bible. And you know, nothing has changed. Technology can come along. We're in the computer age. So many things can be done. Nothing changes on this one. The man still, it's not good that he be alone. It's possible for him to self-destruct. I'm going to send him a helpmeet, somebody to balance him out. There's one other area to this story. You remember when Esther came before the king? He held out the royal scepter. I never tried that in my home. I knew Cheryl wouldn't go for it. There are some things that God gave a man called common sense. Okay, next. So there's verses in the Bible that I can put together that my wife needs to be subject to me. She needs to submit to me. She needs to have reverence for me. And I can even go to the scripture in 1 Peter 3 and 6 that says, Sarah called Abraham Lord. Obedience is one thing that can be forced. Reverence and respect can only be earned. There are some things that a man can go into his home and make happen. He cannot make reverence happen. If we look back to the days of slavery, where one person owned another, he could force obedience. But it only took that master that treated his servant in the way that when that proclamation was made, "You're free now, you can leave." And he said, "Leave? I've been treated so well, I have no desire to go anywhere else." That has something for us. To the husband and wives, there's been a challenge made in our time, an emancipation proclamation for marriages. It's been signed. You don't have to serve. 50% have already left. But remember, some servants never knew they had been in bondage. It's possible in a marriage. I think about a song that says, "I love to serve my Jesus." That's a servant. That's servitude. A privilege so sublime. My life afresh with beauty bright is sparkling all the time. Let's move that over into a marriage. That bud of potential that a woman has that can be crushed, if it's treated with care and help to bloom, it can bring these same results. Loving to serve. It can happen to both husband and wife. I must treat my wife in a way that she never feels bondage. Because what's going to help from that, like we talked about, it's going to be a blessing to me. When the cry comes, "You don't have to serve. You can be free." Then she'll say, "I've always been free. I've never been in bondage." There's another one, song number 207. "His yoke is easy, his burden is light. I've found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow." You know, there is such a strong parallel between Christ and the church, and a husband and wife. can't separate them. He gave us an example. It says, husbands, love your wives just like Christ loved the church. It's true, he gave some commandments for the wife. Submission, reverence. And you know what I believe? Those were intended to be a result of how that following Christ would have been for a husband. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, gave himself for it. No greater love hath this than a man to lay down his life. Christ gave us the example for it. Another area that I'd like to look at for a little bit, passion. That's a word that has been drug in the mud today, but it's something that I need in my marriage. Passion means zeal, ardor, vehement desire. There was a man in Psalms, says, blessed is the man who walketh not in the counsel ungodly, sitteth in the seat of the scornful. Had a few things there that he didn't do, but it said, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. I consider that passion more than just I ought to love my Jesus. It was passion. He had already made his decision. These other things are not going to. His delight is in the law of the Lord. Passion. There's another verse in Matthew that says, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. To me, I'd like to apply that verse to our marriages. And I wish there was a way to get this out across the nation, with so many wrecking and coming so close to home. It's still possible to have a successful marriage. Passion. It suffers violence, but the violent will take it by force. I've made up my mind, just as it was back there when we were going together, I'd do anything. I've made up my mind to go back to that again. There's a place in 2 Kings in the 13th chapter, and we won't be much longer. There was a time where the king needed an answer from a prophet. In the 13th chapter, he comes to him. Second Kings 13 and 18. And here he's telling him what to do to be able to get deliverance from these Syrians. He says, take the arrows, and he took them. He said unto the king of Israel, smite upon the ground, and he smote thrice and stayed. And me just reading that, he didn't tell him how many times to do it. But he had just seen an instant before that where he told him, open up the window, shoot that arrow out. And he saw that there was a link to my obedience to him and deliverance from the Syrians. And here somehow the prophet saw that as meaning half-hearted service. Didn't put my all in it. Says he smote three times and then he stayed. The man of God was wroth with him and said, thou shouldest have smitten five or six times. Then you would have smitten Syria till thou hadst consumed it. Now you're not going to get a full victory. Here's what I get from this. As the Lord came to me and for myself told me, Dan, I got the recipe for a successful marriage. Got to die to yourself. As I saw what that meant and the results that came from it, I've looked back and said, that's what it took. It was that easy. Lord, I'll tell you what, give me back those arrows. I'll wear them out. I'll strike the ground. This is what it requires to have a happy home, is dying to yourself. Let me have those arrows back. I'll strike it many times. I'd like to tell you about the recipe. Very first thing that I need to do is I need to go back and take inventory. I need to go all the way back and take inventory. Salvation. Is it solid? Is there anything that I need to take care of? It's easy for me to just say, oh yeah, I got saved a long time ago. But I need to be real serious about it. I need the Lord's help. When that's clear, sanctification is the answer. And it's not, I've heard this before, talked about sanctification. Setting apart vessels in the temple for sacred use. And it's kind of hard for me to relate to that. But Romans 12 and 1 is one that I can get a hold to. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Now this comes now into the place where Brother Philip was talking about. One time dying or continually dying. I saw sanctification in the past as a one time experience. I could point back to the day. Yes, I remember when I went to the altar to be sanctified. And you know, at that time, I may have given everything that I knew on that day. Sanctification requires that initial experience, but it's progressive from that time forward. There will be things come up day by day that I have to make a choice. Will I die to myself? It's hardly anything that's more important than that happening in a home. For me to die to myself. To see that when trouble comes up, I've got something that's more important than myself. I'm willing to die that this thing would prosper. So the Lord came to me and said, Dan, your solution is you need to die. I can no longer go back and look at that initial experience and say, but I remember years ago. I now had to realize it's progressive. And I didn't progress with it. Times when things happen in the home, and they will, instead of me saying, I just woke up on the wrong side of bed today. Or, that's just the way I am. My parents were like that. I'm like that. No, we don't justify it any longer. There is a work that takes care of this in a home. And that really, I can have all kind of purposes for my marriage. I can have plans that I'll not be this way again unless I go to this fountain for the help. It'll never make it. I'll go for a while and then I'll be right back where I am, where I was before. When I was able to get a hold of this, things started changing in my life, and it started at home. It didn't stop there. It made changes in work. It made changes at church. And really, the change happened in me. No longer was I asking like Peter, what about this person? What are they going to do? No longer do I look at a marriage, at my marriage, and say, but if she would do this, then I would do this. Sanctification is a personal experience. And I have found in my life, when I died, all the things that I wanted to happen and couldn't make them happen, they happened on their own. That's right. And that's why, to me, though it's hard, I have no problem standing in front of you or anybody else and saying, here's some areas, if I were you, I wouldn't waste time on this. It'll cost you. But if from the beginning, if you'll die to yourself, and I tell you, the wife has a part to play in this, but I really believe, because I've seen it from experience, when the husband dies and provides an example, it all starts happening naturally. Got one other place that I'd like to close with. I'd like for us to think about two words. Remember when. Brother Marty, in a message a while back, told this story. That's something I like about Brother Marty, is he's willing to tell you, this is the way I was last week. But the Lord came along to me and said, Marty, you need to straighten up, and I did it. I guess because I relate to myself that much. He said, you know, I came home from work tired out. Just got home, sat down in the easy chair, and my wife said, let's go see Mom tonight. He said, no way. I'm wore out. Can't hardly put one foot in front of another. He said, about that time, he heard his hunting dog up on the mountain. Got something treed. He said, the last thing you do when you're training a hunting dog is don't go up there and see what's going on and help him know he's doing a good thing or a bad. Got up, put one foot in front of another, climbed that mountain and got his dog. And came home, changed his clothes, took his wife to see her mother. Thought about that. Have you ever heard this saying, you do what you want to do? That was a favorite saying of Mom's. When we told her something couldn't happen because something else was happening, you do what you want to do. I'd like to encourage the husbands. I did it today. Go home and put those two words on your bathroom mirror as a reminder. And I don't mean look at it and say, remember when. I remember when she bought four tires instead of getting two. That's not what I'm talking about. There are some things to say, forgetting those things that are behind and looking forward. What I'd like for us to do is go home when we look at that sign. Remember when we were going together. Remember when there was no distance too far to get to visit her. Remember when her wish was my command. Remember that my happiness was when she was happy. So if I'll do that, then tomorrow when I'm driving home from work and she calls me and says, would you go by the store? I need some milk. My response will be different than, I'm tired. Why don't you go get it? Or things around the house. It'll change how we look at life. Remember the scripture, Philippians 2 and 3, because I believe it's the guarantee to a happy home. In lowliness of mind, let each esteem other greater than themselves. And I'm thankful that I believe this is the end of it. You know, that thought can come to your mind when the Lord says, I want you to be the one to die. You can say, but maybe I'll be run over. All I can give is my experience. And that is just the opposite happens. When the Bible says for a wife to reverence her husband, it'll only happen when she sees something that deserves to be reverenced. And that is, a man can feel like we're hardly ever wrong. That's not just in the home. It could be at work. Maybe it's part of that assertive. There's a balance to that too. I believe there's a place for me to say, to win, I don't have to end up right. I don't have to have the last say because God said that I'm the man. I'm the head. Because I've looked at that verse, it doesn't stop. It says, I would have you know that the head of the woman is the man, but it didn't stop there. Remember, you got a head. The head of the man is Christ. The head of Christ is God. We've got some others that we'll have to give account to. I've seen it enough times to say, I don't want to go there, of the man saying, I'm the boss. And forcing obedience, but to the loss of all things. I know, and I've thought about this, it's possible for the things that I've told you tonight that you do them and they don't bring the same results that they have done for me. I'd say do them anyhow. Because we're doing it for God to start with. I've got an eternal soul, destiny, out ahead. The Lord's been dealing with me the last maybe couple weeks about the need for me to measure by something more than this life. If I measure only by this life and the measurement ends at death, then things are going to be real important that I be the winner here. When I move over into an eternal measurement, when I realize that the tape measure that I'm really going to be measured by had no beginning, it has no ending. There was a short span put on this tape measure of a beginning. It was the beginning of time when God created the earth. We feel like that was the beginning of all things. It was just a speck in eternity. And now along comes my 70 years, and I've got a choice to make. If I don't measure it past my dying day, I'm going to make some wrong decisions. People do it for health reasons. If they see death as the end of all things, they'll give everything to gain one more day. If I see death as only an entrance into eternity, it changes how I look at everything. I start saying then, Lord, I understand better about me submitting to your will. You have a desire that I make heaven my home more than you have a desire that these 70 years are all happy ones. He's having to make some adjustments. What would it have been with the children of Israel when he told them, you wanted it this way, and I ended up finally giving you your desire. The cost was way too great. I sent leanness to your soul. And that went farther than this 70 years of existence. So I see it can happen other ways. I would still recommend as a husband, humble yourself. Humility will bring about things that nothing else will. Nor is it something that is like sanctification. You say, I made this choice a couple years ago, and now it's good for life. To have a happy home, it's going to take daily saying, in my home, there is something that's more important than me being right. And I'll tell you, just a few weeks ago, since I've seen the value of our home the way it is now, I made up my mind, I'm going to fight for it. And you know what? It doesn't involve fighting somebody else. You know, we might think about, well, what would I do if somebody were going to hurt my wife? I'd give my life for her. What I need to think about is, what about when my words will hurt her? Will I die? A few weeks ago, I said something, didn't even realize it then, but it had a barb to it, and it hurt. But I was right in what I said. Now, you know what? I can either go away saying I was right and lose, or I can say, and this is what I did, I don't care who's right. I care that our relationship be close. At that time, there's not a right and a wrong. If a person is hurt at a right thing I said, I can be sorry that I hurt them. I guess this comes to, how much do I value? There are some people that may say, it's not worth it. The cost is too great. I'll say, you don't know what you're missing. And it may be that divorce will climb. Let it go to 90%. God still has a plan to a person that will die to themselves, that they be able to get the fullest out of these 70 years that he's allotted us. Sister Lottie had a picture at her house that I remember showed two, maybe mules, a couple piles of hay here. And they're both straining, pulling apart to be able to get to them. Could have pulled all day and not get to it. In a little bit they figured out, you know what? If we both go over here together, we can eat this pile of hay. Then both go together to the other one and get it too. That's really what this is all about. We can spend our life straining and pulling and be unhappy with it. Or we can pull together and life will be great. And should it happen in the future, I'd like to say this. Should you see something different from me in the future, the plan didn't change. I changed. But by the help of the Lord, after I've seen the result that came from this, didn't even realize that this was a part of it. It started when Brother Michael had that message about the glory of the Lord. His desire to dwell with me, just like he desired to dwell with Moses. But he had some requirements. In my Bible, he had 15 pages of requirements for Moses. But when he followed it, step by step, the glory of the Lord came down. That has been, to me, was the start. I didn't realize it had anything to do with the marriage. It was, I want your presence. And the Lord said, I'd love to give it to you, but you got too much of yourself. Going to have to do some unloading. That applies in a home. Along came, as I worked on this, worked on that, the home was the first one. And the change that came from that, I said, bring them on, and I still say it today. And I think there's some things that, for the woman, don't take the responsibility in your home. Hand it back to your husband. There are some women that maybe the husband is not strong-willed. He would just as well that you would take it on. Don't do it. That's his responsibility. Let him go to the Lord and say, I took on this task not realizing what all it was. I'm but a child. Would you give me some guidance? If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. It's brought one other thing to my mind. Something that is very important is that we take responsibility for our actions. Adam was the first one. And when the Lord came back, Eve had caused him to transgress. God didn't go to Eve. He went to Adam. Adam had a response. This woman that you gave me, she's the one that did it. What I found that I need to do is be honest before the Lord. It's not my brother. It's not my sister. But it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. When I do that, everything starts opening up. How would it have been if Adam had humbled himself right at the beginning? That trait moved on down through history. It was in Cain. Am I my brother's keeper? How am I supposed to keep up with where he is? Not taking responsibility. As a husband, I need to take responsibility. It's a hard thing to say when I'm wrong, but I need to admit I'm wrong. I'm the one that needs to change. There are some rewards that come from this. I had mentioned in the last one some instances of me going out and buying a motorcycle. You know what? There's nothing wrong if you want to buy a motorcycle. If the two of you are together. The problem was where I am saying, boy, we got these money problems, don't go spending, and then home I ride on a motorcycle. It's not consistent. But I want to tell you something. After this change, I haven't even mentioned this to Cheryl, but about 2 months ago, I have an old tractor that messed up and I need parts for it. And I found out up in Stillwater, they had one for sale. It was $300 for parts. I thought, you know, I think it'd be a good thing to get this. Well, I need to talk to Cheryl about it. How can I explain it in a way that she would see that that's a good thing? You know, before we've been these two mules with two piles of hay pulling. Called her up and I told her about it. And she said, well, sure. I don't think that'd be any problem. I rode down there with me. I'll tell you what. That was a benefit. We didn't even buy the part. But just to know that a home can run that smooth, to where it's not this pulling back and forth. It's me win, you win. It is now, when I die, it turns everything around. Now, you know, I can hold it in my hand. When I release it, all the difference. So maybe next time one of you will be able to, because I know you'd probably give me some instances that will help me too.